Today is October 26, 2014. It's a Sunday afternoon. It is pitch dark outside. We just changed the clock back to normal yesterday, so we're upsetting the relationship between us and the United States, on that level at least. To all my students listening across the world and all the heartache and grief over the situation in Washington, D.C., I'll only add to the words I said last week the following on a lighter note. One of the heroes of my life, Joe DiMaggio, said it all. Joe DiMaggio was not a tzaddik, but if you recall, when the President of the United States got involved with a young Jewish lady named Monica, so DiMaggio commented, "In the White House? In the White House?" And he was furious. I don't want to go any further. We've had it's a serial display of disgrace of what Torah is all about. In all segments of the Torah society, it's Lakewood, it's YU, it's Hasidish, it's all over. But the Chilul Hashem here, Taret Mishpacha, Mikvah, that's a Lake LaShemayim. So I can only tell you on Shabbos, my wife goes to a different shul. You know, in Israel, everyone has their own shul. I go to shul to daven, get it over with, spend the rest of the morning learning. When I get home, I wake her up, and she starts out to Yakar, where I think they have the longest davening in the world. They can start at 8:15. If they finish by 11:30, a quarter to 12, it's a miracle. So there was a kiddush there for the chatanim and kala. There they honor a couple, a chatan and a kala, chatan Torah, kala Torah, chatan v'kala bereshit. So I went to the kiddush because I knew the people being honored. It was nice that my wife should be there alone. One of them is a very famous talmidah chachama. Aviva Zorenberg. So I went to the kiddush. And I met a couple from Washington, D.C. there. And this couple was very active in the shul we're talking about. And they said to me, "We're ashamed to tell people we're from Washington, D.C. So I answered, "And I'm ashamed to tell people I'm a rabbi." So you can draw your own conclusions. Now, a few comments on what some of the emails I've gotten. I don't know if I can call it corrections. But number one, we spoke about the situation in the five towns in a shul called Sharei Tfila, and I mentioned after class, off the cuff, we were talking about, I didn't even know who the rabbi is, now I have a name, but it's not important. And I mentioned that if you fellas ever stand for a shtela, make up your mind, if you're elected, you're going to take it. Don't drive Balabatan crazy, and then tell them no. So I got a letter from a dear student, Isaac Rice, who was in the Kollel a number of years, and he wrote to me that the story I heard from the Balabatim, I heard it from a number of Balabatim, is incorrect. And he says he knows the rabbi involved, he's a Talmud Chacham, he's a tzaddik. It seems after they elected him, they put conditions on that he would have to leave YU and stop teaching. So I can't search out the facts to the end, obviously. It's the Geit Mishtan in Leben. That's a Chinese expression that I'll let your great-grandparents translate for you. But all I can say is I apologize if I in any way offended the good young rabbi's reputation. It could very well be that this email is correct, and it had nothing to do with the rabbi per se. It had to do when they started putting conditions on after they elected him, which he couldn't accept. Okay, but nevertheless, my word remains a word. If you're standing for a position, Alex, don't drive the Balabatan crazy. Know that if you're elected, but from this we learned, talk with them beforehand. Gentlemen, you say to the president, "If I'm elected, what are the conditions? Know beforehand what you're getting into." And I'm the last one in the world to criticize a rabbi for not wanting to give up a teaching position. I can let you in on a secret about my own life, that by 69 I was faced with a big dilemma. Why you wanted me full-time and my congregation wanted me full-time. So I solved the problem by coming in Aliyah. Now, in relation to Reb Menashe Klein and Eli Wiesel, I told you they first met after the Holocaust. So I want to tell you a very brilliant student who evidently knows how to get the most information possible out of the websites. Chaim Schnitzer, if I'm pronouncing his last name correct, it's someone I've never met, but he's been a student for evidently quite a few years. So he sent me biographical material that appears on one of the websites, and here it says that we met in Auschwitz, says Rabbi Menashe Klein. It wasn't that they just met in Paris after the world, two DPs, but they met in Auschwitz. Wearing a black Hasidic robe, tzitzit, white beard and sidelocks, crying, Klein strikes one as Wiesel's old world alter ego. This is perhaps how Wiesel might have looked at his life, his studies, and his preoccupation with mysticism had it not been interrupted by history. Somehow we got to Buchenwald and were liberated together, Rabbi Klein says. We went to France. And Professor Wiesel attended the Sorbonne. I, on the other hand, kept dwelling in the tent of Torah. So it's an interesting comment, and if that is correct, then I just want to correct myself. I had other information also from a website that they met in France after World War II. A lot went on in France after World War II. A lot went on in Paris, and Baruch Hashem, we benefit from what went on in Paris until today. Anyone know what I'm saying? Gentlemen, where are you living? The French are the biggest number of Olim that came to Israel this year. For the first time in history, France knocked out that. It knocked out America. It's no Chiddush. But Zev, it knocked out Russia. It knocked out the Ukraine. And the French Aliyah, they say, is 90% religious. And this is France that was totally assimilated, where people went to the Folies Bergères, the Jews. God have mercy, what went on in France. When Rabbi Israel Salanter wanted to refer to the capital of sin, he referred to Paris. Okay? He said, if we speak Lashon Hara in Kovna, it's no wonder that the Mechal is Shabbos in Paris. And the Jews are pouring in. What changed France? So you should know, after World War II, yeshivas were established, and then from Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, they poured in. But the Ashkenazim had a big share in educating them. Those yeshivas that were established fallout of World War II impacted on the Sfata community. So when I walked to Shabbos to my wife's shul, I walked from Rav Berlin to Yakar. All I heard on the street was French. I couldn't get over it. I didn't hear a word of Hebrew. I didn't hear a word of English. Forget about Yiddish. All I heard was French, and I didn't understand one syllable. Okay. Next, coming a little closer to home. A number of weeks ago, Reb Menashe Klein is defending his position that you can build an Erev, and he's building the thesis that, constructing the thesis, engendering the thesis, that Klal Yisrael, if you heard my talk last Sunday night, and by the way, my talk Sunday night, I'll tell you what's amazing. Monday, Tuesday, my daughter gave me a Chaim Sabatov, Rabbi Sabatov's new book, B'Shafria Chevyon. I can't go into it now, maybe tomorrow I'll talk about it a little bit more. But I couldn't put the book down. So every free moment I had, because I have my own Siddur, I have my own responsibilities in learning and preparing Shurim, but every free moment I had, I read, and I finished the book in 2 days. What I couldn't get over was Rabbi Sabatov's theme in his new book is essentially exactly what I spoke about Sunday night. And I could now give a lecture using his book. I could lecture for months now on the interlocking of what's happening in Israel, the rupture and reconstruction, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik's article. Unbelievable. But anyway, Reb Menashe Klein is defending himself that ultimately the Jewish people decide halacha. We are the poskim. What does it mean, we are the poskim? That when you have a machlokes in Psak, the people, imlo neviim hein, b'nei neviim hein, the Gemara in Psachim. Fukhazim ayavad davar. Go see what the people are doing. The Gemara brachat, daf mem hei at the top of the page, etc., etc. I don't want to go into everything I said last Sunday night. So, and one of the examples, what Reb Menashe Klein was driving at, is that Jews always had an Erev. You go back to Warsaw, you go back to Lumsha, you go, no matter where you go, Jews had an Arab. So he's saying, all right, you can be Machmir if you wish, follow the Mishkanot Yaakov sheet to worry about Tetzai and Amut, worry about that being Rishit to Rabbim, the Rambam's Psak. But that's a Chumrah. Meika din, the Jews always had an Arab. And then he went on to show how there's big Machloket, and yet Klal Yisrael goes one way. And one of the examples he gave was what we read in the fast day. On a fast day we read Vayachal. We don't read Brachot and Klolot, even though the Gemara says openly that we should read Brachot and Klolot, either from Vayikra or Devarim, but we read Vayachal. How does Vayachal come to a fast day? It's against the Gemara. So my dear student Jonathan Berger, who knows Shas, sent me an email that what you say, Rebbe, is correct, but there is a Masechet Sofrim that says Vayachal. Jonathan, when I lectured on Takanot V'Gezeirot 4 or 5 years ago, I quoted that Masechet Sofrim. But now I was just quoting from Menashe Klein. And Rav Menashe Klein, what I was quoting a few weeks ago, he doesn't cite Masechet Sofrim. But be it as it may, Zelom Alev Elom Orid, it doesn't change the reality that since when does Masechet Sofrim knock out an open Gemara? Doesn't change the reality. The way we live, the way the Torah Jew lives, that ultimately determines halacha. We all make a shakol before we drink water, not a bar in the fashat, although it's a machloket in the Gemara. Okay, so what did we see last week? Now, last week, I showed you something very fascinating, that this machloket, can you have an Erev in Brooklyn, can you have an Erev in Manhattan, this machloket became dominant in the world of Reb Moshe and the world of Reb Menashe Klein. And when you talk about Reb Moshe, the last people, what are his most famous psakim? Inevitably, people will talk about the fact that he asked an Erev in Brooklyn. You'll ask about Reb Menashe Klein, people will say, it's only because of Reb Menashe Klein we have an Erev. And I showed you that Reb Moshe Bick, when they talk about the people involved in Machloket, the example they give of Reb Moshe Bick refusing to budge on halakha is that he opposed the Erev. And this colored their lives, for better or for worse. I have a feeling 100 years from now, when they talk about Reb Moshe, any Rebbe giving a Shayurim in response to literature, the Rakefet of 100 years from now, he'll be talking right away about the Erev issue. And then I ended off the class, I showed you the Masoret Moshe, which is a very fascinating volume. And I'm going to comment on Masoret Moshe again and add a side comment because people are bothering me from South Africa, etc., etc. You'll see in a second. But the Masoret Moshe, it's a rare book already. I don't know. I have to thank my Talmud Steve Gross who got it for me because it seems no one has it anymore. It appeared, it came out, over 700 pages. The Hebrew is disjointed. It should have either been written in English, as one of the Rebbeim in New York told me it was originally written, a Hasidic Rebbe who learned by Rav Moshe. He told me it was written in English originally and translated into Hebrew, but it should have been styled. It should have been styled. The Hebrew should have been styled. But nevertheless, you can go through the volume. I couldn't put it down again. People asked me in a shtibble, like they gave me Musa because I daven Shabbos. I looked for the earliest minyan I could find in the part of Borough Park I was staying in. The earliest minyan was 6:30 in I believe it was the Sfadash Shul. And the Hasidim laughed at me. Shame, what do you do? What do you know? They daven 9 o'clock. By 11 o'clock, they're sitting down to a Hasidish, a Kiddush, and Kugel, and Cholent, and the Mzinkta Nigin. And boy, it's a different world. And I told them, what do? I showed them this 700-page book. I said, I can't get onto the plane to go back home if I haven't finished the book. Elal has a hold on me. If I haven't finished the book, not allowed on the plane. So Baruch Hashem, I finished as I was walking through the long way to get to the plains in New York. Baruch Hashem. Now, what's fascinating about the book, it's Reb Moshe talking with his grandson. And I have to say, his grandson appears to me, Reb Mordechai Pendler, too honest. And he portrays his grandfather. This is Reb Moshe Feinstein we're talking about. How his grandfather couldn't comprehend the Chazon Ish. You know what, right? Because what does the Chazon Ish say? There's no Reshut HaRabim at all. The bigger the cities grow, the less chance for Reshut HaRabim. And of course, the houses on all sides, you are fenced in by fences. Houses, what are they if not fences? No one can jump over a four-story house. Yeah, when you walk through Yerushalayim, show me one area where you don't have houses on all sides. And when you dead end, you have houses like Palmach, dead ends, Rehov Chalap, dead ends into Palmach. There you have houses on three sides, new, that already takes it out of any thought of being a Reshit HaRabim the Oraita. So, and it's amazing how Reb Moshe couldn't comprehend. He says, and his son is pressing him, his grandson is pressing him. And you see, and Reb Moshe says, what do you think? In Europe, we didn't have houses, we didn't have homes. How come no one thought of this before? So his son tells him, well, there were those that alluded to it before, the Chazon Ish. The Mishnah Berurah alludes to it as well, but the Chazon Ish is the one who publicized it. And you see the difficulty Reb Moshe had. And I have to tell you, this is something about Gedolei Yisrael. The way you grow up, your formative years, it's very hard for you in later years to open new vistas. I can give you many examples. I always gave the example of my Rebbe before the Rebbe. I had a great Talmud Chacham. None of you even heard his name today. Rav Shmuel Eliezer Volk. He has grandchildren in Lakewood. His granddaughter is married to my neighbor, Dr. Menachem Frieden. He's a dentist in Jerusalem. His wife, Adina, is a granddaughter of Rav Shmuel Eliezer Volk. No, Rav Shmuel Eliezer Volk, I write about him in Washington, was Hitler, what Hitler did to us, God have mercy, like what Hitler did to us, you don't start to understand. Here's a survivor sitting here, but we're all survivors. He destroyed the lives of another 5 million, those that survived. No one came out of it. How could you come out of it in one piece? God have mercy. So Rav Shmuel Eliezer, had the world remained normal, he would have been Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, and they would have acknowledged he was a Bucky in Shasim and Kudshim and Tarot and a Mechadesh and a Telzer. He was a Talmud Reb Chaim Rabinovich. He once chopped my head off because he said Reb Chaim, and I said, Rebbe, who do you mean? What's meant me? Reb Chaim Briska? He went through the ceiling, how I dared put Reb Chaim Briska on the level of Reb Chaim Rabinovich, Reb Chaim Telzer. He was Chavruta with Reb Azriel Rabinovich, who was killed by Hitler. That was Reb Chaim's son, who would have gone on to become the key Rosh Yeshiva. So he taught, he gave a shi in yeshiva. You know, we were kids, American kids. Everyone, we made a big fuss over the Rav. I had a doctor at Berlin, you understand. And never he suffered in the shadow of YU and the Rav. And he was a gone idea. So one time, we were learning Baba Batra, Cheskas Habatim. Cheskas Habatim, as you know, is not easy. The Tosfos in Cheskas Habatim, the longest Tosfot in Shas, to my meager knowledge, appear in Cheskas Habatim. And the Me'iri on Baba Batra came out from manuscript. I believe it was edited by Professor Sofer, the Chatam Sofer's Ur Einikel, who taught at the seminary. I think his name is Avraham Sofer, if I'm not mistaken. So I bought, I remember $10 was a fortune of money, but I used to get lunch money, I didn't use it, I didn't eat, I bought Svarim. So I brought it into class, and he couldn't handle it. The Reb Lezer Volk couldn't handle it. Mir ne nishto kupta pa mir, mir nishto hata miri in tels, in ich kup nishto rein in a miri yet. We didn't have a miri in tels, and I'm not looking into a miri now. And he couldn't handle it. I can tell you more what happened to me in Mechala vis-a-vis the Rav. In Mechala, I always allowed outsiders, any class I ever gave, if outsiders came, Baruch Haba, when Zev told me he's bringing his grandparents, who I know, wow, his what's that, your great-uncle was my classmate. So I said, until you bring a million people, you're going to have permission. If you're going to bring, you follow me, Isaac, if you're going to bring a million, I got to tell Sherry to get more chairs. So he said, it's only two. So I can tell you in Michalai, I had a lady sat in, she's very famous, Zichrona Levracha, Shulamit Katan. She was the librarian of the Knesset, Dr. Shulamit Katan. Her husband had a PhD. They were German Jews who ran away to France, who got married in the middle of the Holocaust. Everyone laughed at them. And when she died, I believe there were something like 500 or more direct descendants, all al Admat HaKodesh, ranging from Haredim to what she said in an interview in Makor Rishon, when in her final years, my descendants range from Haredim to Dati Light. Dati Light is an expression here, what we would call left-wing orthodoxy. So she sat in my class, and I told the class, I was quoting a Rambam, and I told the class, I'm young enough that I only use the Frankel Rambam. Right? You guys probably grew up in it, but each volume that came out, the first volume was Zmanim. Zmanim came out, because that was a big sell. Everyone's learning Shabbat, Pesachim, Sukkah, Rosh Hashanah, Yomah. And I said, but I want to tell you a story. I said, I have a dear friend who saved my life. I read about this in Washington. I can mention his name, Rabbi Emanuel Holzer, who's not well today. Man, he should save my life. Saved my life because his eldest son was my student, 70, 71, in the new BMT, second year BMT. And this was a kid that never had a Rebbe that got him excited. And he studied with me. I still remember in Abravanel 23, he had a paper bag he brought to class. I never knew. Halfway into the year, I found out in the paper bag he was recording me. Until then, I thought I'm like the Rav, don't record, who knows where. From that point on, I said, anyone who wants to record, record, you understand? So his father rewarded me by feeding me tapes of the Rav. He was the Rav's right hand when the Rav was in New York. What Abe Levovitz was in Boston, Manny Holzer was in New York and RCA. So he would give me tapes, reels, of the Yachid Kallah in Boston. So I'm listening to the Yachid Kallah, and I'm repeating it word by word. The Rav says, who has a Rambam? A Rambam, Ichtaf Havani, Hilchot Shabbos, Hilchot Shabbat, a Rambam. So someone from the audience feeds him a Frankel Rambam that had just come out. It has to be 74, 75. You can probably pick it up on a website, the Yachid Kallah, you can hear it with your own ears. And the Rav says, no, not this. It's a new Rambam. I'm not used to it. I can't look at it. Ich will a Vashiva Rambam. Get me a Warsaw edition of the Rambam like I had when I was a kid. So they ran into the Beis Medrash and pulled out a Warsaw edition, and the Rav was happy. And you see, this is Reb Moshe. I can understand it. And you see from the transmission here, when Mordechai Tendler wanted to show him the Chazon Ish, Reb Moshe couldn't. He couldn't even look at it. He couldn't believe it. He said, "This can't be. It's not possible. It's not possible. I don't comprehend it. If this is the case, then the whole concept of Erev changes." And Reb Moshe couldn't change. Okay. Now on Masoret Moshe, before I go further, I only want to move sideways. I got correspondence in the volume, and it's interesting because when I went through the volume, I also was shocked. Let me quote an ancient Chinese proverb. You know what? You need a little seichel when you publish. So there were some incidents there, some questions about treating a Gentile on Shabbos. And Reb Moshe, treating a Gentile on Shabbos, a doctor. How many of you are medical doctors? How many medical doctors are listening? Treating a doctor on Shabbos. And you know, in the halachic literature, it's hard to justify being mechalel Shabbos. He's from the Oraita for a non-Jew. So if any, and the Rav, by the way, Jerry Blitzstein, Yaakov Blitzstein, who received Pras Yisrael, my classmate, from Be'er Sheva University, there's a famous conversation he had with the Rav about this. And it's a problem. But whenever anyone asks me, I tell them very simply, I follow the Shita of the Meiri. You all know the Meiri Shita, that all the negative feeling about Goyim, it's only in relation to an Oved Avodah Zarah. But if a guy accepts monotheism, and halachat kamavkama, if he accepts the Sheva Mitzvah in relation to Shabbos, he's exactly like a Jew as far as medical practice. All right. To a certain degree, that solves the problem. There's a famous tshuva of the Chatam Sofer, where you get involved with what's the Noda B'Yehuda, where you get involved with Chilul Hashem, if we don't treat them. Well, that's a more of a put-down attitude. In other words, really, we shouldn't treat Goyim, we shouldn't treat Obama if he's critically ill on Shabbos, but it shouldn't make a Chilul Hashem. The New York Times will say that Dr. Rothkopf, I'm talking about my brother now, refuses to treat Obama on Shabbos, it would be a Chilul Hashem, so we allow him to treat Ke'en Pikuach Nefesh of the Jewish people. All right, if you take the Miri's approach, it's certainly a lot easier to explain to the New York Times. What's amazing about the book Mesoret Moshe is that in a few places, where Moshe's attitude towards Gentiles is very, very negative. And he'll only be the Eved if he's Mater. We're talking Shum D'Oraita, what a doctor has to do. It's only because of Chilul Hashem. It's not because there's any innate quality to the Gentile. So I need not tell you, someone sophisticated, raised in the Western world, is greatly troubled by this. And Mordechai Tendler writes it openly. So I have to tell you, I have two comments on it. One, Mordechai Tendler should have been, I think, a little wiser. You know, I always say in scholarship, you don't have to say everything, but whatever you say has to be truthful. The difference between Rakefet's works and Art Scroll's historic works is you will, to the best of my knowledge, there's not one word that is not true in the seven volumes I've been privileged to publish, and many of them have gone through many editions, as you know. There's not one word that's not true. Not one word. I've never been corrected on something I wrote as far as being a fact. Okay? Art Scroll, Shem Yerachem, and their history volumes, how many errors, how much deceit there is. It's frightening. I wrote letters, I never got an answer. I stopped writing letters, I'm going to waste my time. Zvulun Chalap, Rabbi Chalap once got an answer. The answer was a disgrace. You have Elias, there's a whole article by J.J. Schechter on the early issues of Torah Mother Journal, where Elias actually writes, I can't believe it. History is not, when we teach history, it's not what really happened, it's what we want our students to believe what happened. I'm paraphrasing it, but it's mamash a quote. It is beyond words, beyond words. So, should have been more circumscribed. He should have been more careful in what he wrote. But on the other hand, I have to tell you very simply, Reb Moshe lived through the communist era. You know what communism was? What they did to European Jewry? He almost had to go through the Holocaust. He lost many relatives in the Holocaust. He left Europe 1937. They finally got him out. Well, what can I tell you? It requires greatness of human spirit to have a benevolent attitude towards non-Jews, following what we have seen. Look at the world today. Look what's going on. Look at Kerry. Look who Obama, what's his way of thinking. But nevertheless, I have to tell you, there were Gentiles who risked their lives to save Jews, both in the Holocaust, both in the Russian era. Arabs, even in Hebron in 1929, risked their lives to save Jews. So I've never, ever taught hatred. I always felt it was my mentor, Rav Meir Kahana's big mistake. It was my madrich, like I grew up on his lap. He boasted when he was sitting shiva for his father. So a lot of Talmidim went to visit him from BMT, and he boasted, "Your Rebbe, he's only here, he's only a Zionist because of me." And they came back, "Rebbe, is it true?" I said, "Yes, it's true. It was my madrich." He was then the Rosh Ken, and I was the Skan Rosh Ken under him. But I can never teach hatred. If an Arab loops up a stone to throw at me, I'll be alacham, allowed to shoot him. I, the leftists, don't like this. The leftists don't live in a real world. They're insane. They're not living in a real world. They don't. This whole summer, everything that happened, the missiles didn't land on them. They didn't see them. I don't understand them. But we can't teach hatred. We have to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. So those people, until proven otherwise, but they're Gentiles. I found this in my work for the missing in action. I write about it in Washington, 1982. The three boys who never came back, Katz, Bamel, and Feldman, two of them were Hezda boys, all Shiryon, all tankists. In my work there, a lot of Gentiles helped. They were Moshe Nefesh, fabulous people. Ohavei Yisrael. So the critique is a critique. Why did Rabbi Mordechai Tendler quote his grandfather word by word? You could have quoted it in a less fundamental way. But on the other hand, I'm a lamed zchut in Reb Moshe. We didn't go through what he went through. And I can tell you that you all know that we worked, my wife and I worked for the Mossad. It's no secret today. You don't have to believe one word I wrote. The Mossad put out a book. You can read it all in B'nativ HaDemama. So I'll tell you something interesting. Malka and I sent over 200 people, including Yitz Rubin, who's sitting here. We sent over 200 people to Russia. It was not an easy thing. They had to go, you know, when we finally convinced someone to go, they had to go through a whole security check. It was not simple. This is not coming from America, from the National Council sending you. This is the branch of the Mossad sending you, although you didn't know who was sending you. You weren't allowed to mention the name of the person in charge. We called them the boss. And among the people I sent was a very prominent doctor, emergency doctor, emergency medicine, a man who changed, revolutionized medicine in Israel. His name is David Applebaum Hashem Yikom Damo, later killed the night before his daughter's wedding, together with his daughter who just had gone to mikvah. God have mercy. I still haven't recovered from that tragedy. It's 11 years ago already. So I sent David, and David asked my permission to tell his Rebbe, Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, he's going. So I said to David, how can I say no? But you got to tell Rabbi Aaron, he can't talk about it. So David went to visit Rabbi Aaron, because he was in America occasionally. He dropped in from New York, wherever he was, Cleveland, I think he was, to Chicago, and he went to see Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. And he told Rabbi Aaron what's going on, and Rabbi Aaron said, and you will be in Leningrad? And he said, yes. So Rabbi Aaron gave him the address of a relative. He said, very few of my relatives survived the Holocaust, but these are Feinsteins who live in Leningrad. Remember, Rabbi Aaron's mother was a Feinstein, right? Rebellia Pujan, Rebellia Feinstein's daughter, Pesha, was married to Reb Moshe, Rabbi Aaron's father. And believe it or not, David got to them, and he met with them. And here were people who knew they were related to the greatest rabbis in the world. And they didn't know one syllable about Yiddishkeit. Survived the Holocaust, only to live under the communists, no shuls, no rabbis. You showed any Zionism, the gulag. Judaism, the gulag. So, ani melamed zchut al Reb Moshe. We're now coming to the saddest part of Torah I will ever teach. And what's even sadder is, it's part of our life until today. Was it always like this? People always ask me the question. With all the scandals we have, people say to me, and when you were growing up, Rebbe, was it like this? And my answer is, absolutely not. So the wise Alex say to me, no, it was, but they swept it under the carpet. All I can tell you is, I beat the heck out of a Talmud who asked the Haredi Rebbe, how could this rabbi in Washington, D.C. do it? The mikveh, the cameras, what they just discovered today, what the police announced at the university he taught. God have mercy. So the Rebbe tells him, he quotes the Gemara, Kol ha-gadomi chavero, yitzro gadomi chavero. So remember, did I say it in class, or I said it Sunday night, or I said it Shabbos at Kiddush? That's one Maimon Chazal I don't believe. I don't understand. I can give you a whole shena. I know how to kite shit up. But to take it on its superficial level, I don't believe it. And I believe in every word of Chazal. But not... And this Charedi Rebbe tells a Talmud of mine. A Talmud of mine. It's my Talmud 80, 81, but he remains in touch with me until today. Tells him that I can assure you, he gave him two examples. I believe the two examples were one of Reb Moshe Feinstein and the Chafetz Chaim had a bigger Yetzer Hara than that rabbi. Let me tell you, if this Charedi Rosh Yeshiva Rebbe Balmusa would say that to me, I'd smack his face, bring over Sam Levinson's book, I don't want to go further, and charge him 2 cents for what I did to his face. Seltzer, if you know what I'm talking about. Vic, thank you. At least you know. I've been dealing here with guys that they didn't know who Sam Levinson is. It's a new generation. That's life. Da holeichu da ba. Just what Kohelis talks about. Vayakam melech hadash. That's it. So, Reb Moshe Feinstein has a bigger yetzer hara to Chafetz Chaim. I cut the guy's tongue out. Was it always like this? With all the machloket, I don't know. But I'll tell you what the cause of machloket is, and this is the key if you want to be a Ben Torah and a healthy Jew. And this I owe to my Rebbe, Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. You see, we all have opinions. And I should hope we have opinions. In order to learn smichet, to hear a shir from Rabbi Bednash, Rabbi Miller, you have to be a bright guy. A dummy can't survive those classes. Rakefet, all right, dummies can survive. One dummy teaching another, it's okay. But Rabbi Bednash, Rabbi Miller, so you have to be bright. All right, if you're bright, you think you know it all. I see some of my grandsons are very bright, and boy, they think they know it all. Right? That's part of life. They're in their 20s, they're conquering the world. They're conquering, they have all types of fellowships and scholarships and honors and shmanas. And I told one grandson, the only way you can pay back the Technion for what they're doing for you is to win a Nobel Prize. And I'm going to insist upon it that you win a Nobel Prize. He's going to have a problem whether he remains in research or practices medicine. He's going to have 2 degrees, PhD, MD. I told him, you got a milu atarit for kivshuva. To practice medicine, your wife will do it. She's a regular doctor. You have to stay in research and solve the cancer problem. And then I'm going to speak up at the government level and tell them we don't make it available to any country that doesn't have its embassy in Jerusalem. Okay? You want to get our technology, our knowledge? Embassy in Jerusalem. Then we make it available. Rakefet's dream. So, you know, you have an opinion. When you have an opinion, you believe you're right and everyone is wrong, and that's a healthy attitude. I think I had it till about the age of 23. And then I learned very quickly, you have an opinion, but there are other opinions out there. And as I grew older and I continue to study with the Rav on a daily basis, if you jump into my car, you're going to hear the Rebbe's voice. I've learned that was the secret of the Rav. It's beautiful. I had Litvisha Rebbes that if I told them I went to Lubavitch, if I told them I went to a Buddhist temple, they would have been happier. The Rav, I wish it weren't so, but I'm telling it as it is, Alex. The Rav had a different attitude altogether. He had appreciation for the Litvisha Welt in which he lived, which was basically his gestalt. Not entirely, but 80%. He had an appreciation for Chassidut, which, if you're familiar with the 2 volumes, The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph P. Soloveitchik, I think it comes across very, very strongly. If only I have to redo one day in the Kollel, because this was done before recording. I redid the Rav's most famous shayurim word by word by word. I redid the Lincoln Square talk on Hasidus. I mean, part of it I quote in the Rav, but But hearing it word by word, it puts you in a different world. The Rav had an appreciation for German Orthodoxy. It doesn't mean he was a follower of Rav Hirsch, but he understood Rav Hirsch very well. And Allah had come of a kama. And by the way, this is the key to Ashgafa. Reb Lazer Silva ultimately becomes persona non grata in the very Agudat Yisrael he founded in America. Because with the swing to the right you have in America, you have in Israel, these are from Jews. And they believe they have the monopoly on truth. They could not tolerate Reb Lazer Silva for one comment he made. Agudat Yisrael is my older sister, and Mizrahi is my younger sister. This was something beyond their conception. You follow me, Aaron? Couldn't comprehend it. And this was Reb Lazer. This was the Rav. This was the Rav. Allah had kama v'kama in halacha. Open up. Open up Shas. What's the first Mishnah? And what do you see in the Mishnah? Three different opinions. Right or wrong? A third of the night, the first Mishmar, half a night, all night. Machloket right there. Open up any Daf Gemara. Machloket in any Daf Gemara. Open up the Rambam, the Ravid. Machloket. Open up the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah. Machloket, right down the line. Open up responsible literature. All right, we attempt to reach a conclusion. But we never can say, rip out the Ra'abad, or the Ravid as you say it. Do you still say Ravid in YU in New York? Ravid, right? Because when I came to Israel, everyone talks the Ra'abad, the Ra'abad. Didn't know what they were talking about. So one person had mercy upon me. He told me, the Rabbad is, was yet geladen, the Ravid. Baruch Hashem. The Ravid is the Rabbad. The Rabbad is the Ravid. The Shalom of Yisrael. I was at a wedding last week. My brother's grandson got married. Brother's grandson. So his daughter's family, very large family, they're all... When the split in Merkaz Harav, they all went to Har Mor, if you know what I'm talking about. There was a split in Merkaz Harav, I can't go again, years ago. There's a reason why there was a split. And now there are two major yeshivas, Merkaz Harav and Har Mor, Rabbi Tal. So you had Mitzad HaChatan, the Rosh Yeshiva from Har Mor. Fine. Well, you're getting married to a girl. She also has a family, right or wrong. We're not living in a world where we're not allowed to mention women's first names. We don't publish their pictures. We give a mazel tov to the parents. You never hear a word about the kala. Baruch Hashem, he's marrying a girl. This girl happens to be Taimaniya Tahora on both sides. Oh, all rabbis, Chachamim, her father is a Ram, in a yeshivat chesda. So you had now sheva brachas, birchat erusin, Ashkenazim from Hamar, and teimaniyim, not svartim. Gentlemen, I didn't understand any of the brachat, not one. I'm living in Israel 46 years. The first year I was here, I tried to retain, in accordance with the psak of the Reverend Rav Cook, Havara Ashkenaziz Boruch Atoa, and my daughters laughed at me, and I asked Rav Gorin, and he beat the hell out of me, and gave me 100 proofs that that Rashi spoke Sfardit. So from that moment on, I became an Israeli, Baruch Atah, fine, Baruch Atah, I have to break my lips to say it, and for 31 years I grew up saying Baruch Atah. The Yemenites? Oh my God. I couldn't understand one syllable. One syllable. It was beyond comprehension. But that's Torah.
They
don't daven as a Ashkenaz. They pronounce God's name the way the Litvakim do. It's an amazing thing. but they pronounce a dalet, a gimel, they pronounce a nayin, a hey, an aleph. Believe me, Herbie, you and I, in a Taimani synagogue, would be lost. It's like going to Meir Tzidkun's shtibl in Shanghai. You follow? But who's right? Who's wrong? We're all right. No one's wrong. We're human beings. We're people. Differences of opinion. In Israel, we have a miracle. Kibbutz Galyat. Every time there's an inter-ethnic marriage, we go closer to the great dream of V'kol Banai Echlimudei Hashem, without machloket. I have in my family already half Moroccan, half Libyan. My brother also has, but this was a Taimaniya complete, both sides. Okay. This concept, I'm right and everyone else is wrong, is absolutely frightening. And it engenders enmity, hatred, beyond description, and in my humble opinion, totally anti-Torah. And now I'll clue you in a conversation I had with an open-minded Satma. Not just open-minded, but a shtickle Talmud of mine, who a number of Satma listening, they came to see me in New York. I told you that. I don't know if I told you, I told others. They wanted me to give a shir. I said, I can't do it for one simple reason. If I give a shir to you, whichever Satma Rav you follow is going to find out, and he's going to criticize me in public. He's going to criticize me. I'm going to have to defend myself. I'm going to wind up engendering machloket. And I said, I came to New York for holy purposes, to create Torah and Yirat Shemayim and love of Eretz Yisrael. I didn't come to create machloket. You want to hear a shir? Come to Bris Kollel. And then I quoted an ancient Chinese proverb. They were so happy with that quote, they were dancing on the table. I said, Agas speit nicht auf den Tisch. Alex, do you know what that means? A guest doesn't spit on the table. In New York, I'm a guest. Speich nicht auf den Tisch. So we got into a whole talk. I said, how can the Satmar Rav hold his opinion? If take a look in Eretz Yisrael today, we're heading towards 7 million Jews. And I said, at least 2 million qualify as Shomrei Shabbos. I'm not talking now Mesoratayim. I'm talking about Shomrei Shabbos, who will not be Mechal Shabbos for Prehesia. Over 2 million, and it keeps on growing. The whole country. I quoted the Rambam, HaParish Menetziva, the Rambam in Hilchot Shuva, Perik Gimel. So he said to me, yes, don't you think the Satmar Rav knows this Rambam? The question is, who is the Tzibur? I couldn't believe my ears, but I knew that was his Satmar Rav's opinion. You mean to say 50,000 Satmar Hasidim, most of whom couldn't learn a Daf Gemara and hold it properly? That's Klal Yisrael? And 7 million Jews living al Admat HaKodesh? We're not Klal Yisrael? Wow. You have to have a broad look, and you have to be generous of spirit. I can have a viewpoint, the strongest viewpoint in the world, but there are other viewpoints out there. And before we begin, Rabbi Menashe Klein, I share with you one more story from my life, just to bring the message home. Otherwise, you don't understand Rabbi Menashe's. It's frightening, this tshuva. When the Rav died, Bar Ilan University discovered there's a guy named Aaron Rekefet alive. The truth is, I don't like to give lectures. I'm teaching the kollel. You come to the kollel. I don't like to be chad pami, give a lecture, give and run. But the Rav died and they wanted me to speak, so I gave a series of lectures at Bar Ilan. So after the final lecture, they made a luncheon in my honor. Fine. I had just spoken about the Rav and the problems that he faced on the American scene and how he created what we call today, what I call at least, westernized orthodoxy. And one of the problems, of course, we're going to come to it in the Monday class, is synagogue council. Can a Reform, conservative, orthodox rabbi, lay leader sit together? And I explained the Rav's opinion, which was very tolerant, if not positive, towards synagogue council within certain guidelines. I explained it beautifully, the Rav's opinion, etc. We'll deal with it Monday. It comes up with Dr. Belkin and the Rav. And at the luncheon, I was talking with the dean of this program. I don't know, and I got involved with the rabbinate, and I said to him, I am so opposed to synagogue council, you have no idea. And he looks at me. He said, you just quoted your Rebbe, and you are so opposed? I said, yeah, I quoted my Rebbe, that's the Rebbe's opinion. He's entitled to his opinion. I'm not putting my opinion into his mouth, but I'm also entitled to my opinion. That's what the Rebbe taught us. And I was in the act of rabbinate, you know, in the front line of Torah, and I have a different attitude. That's exactly what Torah is about. With all my love and respect for my Rebbe, he authorized me to have a different opinion if I wish. But you have to back it up. You have to know what you're saying. You have to be able to explain yourself, justify yourself, cite the sources, etc. My dear students, in a minute I just want to take names because I think the crowd is bigger than the registration, which is no good. I have to have your name, otherwise I can't give credit for the course. You know, supplementary rabbinic credit. Now, I'm quoting from Oma Nichoma. Again, not all the information in the original booklets was put into the Mishnah Halachot, his classic 18 volumes. It was edited. Some of the Machloket was left out. What I'm quoting from is Oma Nichoma, which was published in 1981. And here, what had happened, just to give you a little bit background, the Agudat Rabbanim turned it into a cours célèbre. The Union of Orthodox Rabbis in the United States and Canada had now become a union of basically Rashi Yeshiva, Malamdin. There were very few Orthodox rabbis in the field who were members of Agudat HaRabbanim. Those of you, we'll talk about this a year or two from now when we deal with the history of the Agudat HaRabbanim, the history of RCA, the Igor HaRabbanim, and you have the Hasidic Rebbeim had their own union of rabbis, but now you're talking Agudat HaRabbanim. Rav Moshe Feinstein is the president, and they turned it into an inyan of kavod for Reb Moshe that chas v'shalom, you should differ with Reb Moshe. You are not allowed to differ with Reb Moshe. And they bitterly attacked Reb Menashe Klein that he has the chutzpah to publish and to permit an Erev in Brooklyn and to go against Reb Moshe. And he writes a long kuntris answering the Agudas HaRabbanim. Now, some of the background is what we spoke about a year and a half ago, that originally Reb Moshe and Reb Menashe Klein had a big machleket in the 1950s. Who remembers? What was the machleket about? The rain, if you're allowed to put a plastic hat over your shtreimel, over your black hat to protect it from the rain. Reb Moshe Asid and Reb Menashe Klein was matir. And Reb Menashe Klein asked Reb Moshe permission to differ with him because Reb Menashe Klein was a youngster just out of the Holocaust. Reb Moshe was then Reb Moshe Feinstein. And Reb Moshe says, absolutely, you have the right to differ. This is what Shelut and Shubit is all about. This is what learning Torah is all about. And here, so many years later, he differs with Reb Moshe, and they fight him bitterly. And he writes, this is Reb Menashe Klein writing, Reb Menashe HaKatan, as Rafi says. He writes, I want to talk with Reb Moshe, I want to explain myself to Reb Moshe, but I can't get in. And he tells the story, he tried to come to Reb Moshe's house. Now this is 1981, where Reb Moshe, you understand, you grow older, you grow weaker, you can't do what you used to do when you were younger. Reb Moshe is now aged, has heart problems. He's surrounded by Talmidim, and above all, Mordechai Tendler, who we just quoted from Masoret Moshe, his grandson. And he says, they won't let me in. And he says, I would love to talk with Rav Moshe, love to explain myself, but I can't get into Rav Moshe. He says, it's not the way it used to be when I could approach Rav Moshe. All right, fine. Now, Agudas HaRabbanim, one of the driving forces was Rav Simcha Elberg. Again, it's a name that none of you recognize today. I actually taught his nephew in YU. Rav Simcha Elberg was a survivor from the Warsaw Ghetto. A big Talmud Chacham. He never had children. When you don't have children, it's an open Gemara in Sanhedrin. You cannot be a member of the Beit Din HaGadol. You cannot be a member of Sanhedrin because you're Al-Zari, you're cruel. What does it mean you're cruel? You don't know how to compromise. Children beat the hell out of parents. You understand? You're going to find that out. You have little children. Oh, little children, maybe they keep you awake at night. They're hungry, they're sick. But boy, when children grow older, psychologists make a fortune of children beating up on their parents. And I say that as someone who has lived many lives, not just my own, but so many students, so many people consulting with me. And boy, oh boy, I can't go into it now, but I refer you to my lectures on Kibbutz Aviyim. So Rav Simcha Elberg was a battler, and he, as you just heard from Herbie Maltz or Chaim Maltz, he fought with Rav Teitz. He's fighting with Rav Menashe Klein. And he says to Rav Menashe Klein, he accuses him of acting quickly, acting in secret. Who asked you to do this and you didn't consult? And Rav Menashe Klein answers back that I acted in secret. I didn't consult. We went slowly. We were Rabbanim, we consulted one with the other. He will soon list out all the Rabbanim he consulted with. But here it's very interesting. He says, and you accused me of proving an Erev of all of Borough Park? I only approved an Erev from 18th Avenue to 12th Avenue. Can anyone tell me why, what he's talking about? Who here is from Borough Park? Who is from Flatbush? Who is from Brooklyn? Can anyone help me? 18th Avenue to 12th Avenue. What do you have next to 18th Avenue? You have the train, McDonald Avenue, which cuts from 18th and cuts out. And the 12th Avenue, you have the, what's it, what train is it? The D train, I believe it is. The D. And 18th is the F, and the 12th is the D. And this whole Erev, those are two tzerat ha-petach, you follow? That no one can interfere with. This goes back to the original Machleket in New York in 1902 on the east side, where there was the Third Avenue well. You fellas never saw the Third Avenue well in your life, but we, Steve and I, grew up on the Third Avenue well. And that's the famous Shaila I told you where it's called Hanan. If you get on the Third Avenue well in the Bronx, pay the day before and go down to the east side for Simchas Torah. You follow? Second day Yom Tov. And he was matir. What the old timers told me in shul in the 1940s, I discovered 50 years later, 60 years later, he was matir. Then he retracted when the Rabbanim in New York yelled, if we'll be matir going on the Third Avenue well, it'll end all of Shabbos altogether. It ended anyway, but it would have ended a generation earlier. So he says, I don't say all of Borough Park. I said only that part within the two trains. And he says, you talk to me about who I consulted with? So he says, first of all, I'm not an official rabbi. Listen to these words and what he's alluding to. He says, I'm not really involved in the rabbinate. I don't get involved. I'm just concerned with my yeshiva and my shul. I don't give any heksha, whether it's food or drinks. Listen to this line. Lo bekesef v'lo bechinam. Lo al hamelech v'lo al hasukah. And gentlemen, in that line, doctorates have been written. Ford, Corruption and Holiness, Hal Gatsworth, Columbia University. Book was published in the 60s, and now there's a new doctorate written. What went on in the greater American New York area, beyond New York, Boston, Philadelphia, the Agudas Harabbanim, the Kashrut, the Fakerai, sugar and salt. What can be the problem? And even on that, I don't give a heksha. So he says that you accuse me that I'm responsible. He says, no, people came to consult with me in learning. And why do they come to me? And he says, I'm Hungarian, basically. The Hungarians are Talmidei Talmidim of the Chatam Sofer. And the Chatam Sofer was Matir and Erev. Our tradition is Lahakel. And this is why people consult with me. And he starts telling stories here. I visited the Sigurd Satmar Rav. Now, the Sigurd Satmar Rav, this is what we're talking about. The Satmar Rav died. He had no, I don't believe he had any children who survived him. I think, and the children he had were daughters. He never had a son. So his nephew, who was the son of the Sigurd Rav, became the Satmar Sigurd Rav. The two children today who are fighting, Reb Zalman and Reb Aaron, are sons of the original Satmar Sigurd Rav. And I went to ask him, and you got to remember, when it comes to Satmar Hasidim, the Rav is the Posek Achron. And the Sigurd Rav said to me that Gan in Satmar we had an Erev. And he says, my grandfather built an Erev in Sigurd. And he was very positive. So then Reb Menashe Klein says, a few months later, I went to talk to the Satmar Dayan. And this is a very famous name. We've mentioned it before, Reb Yecheskel Rot. And he said to me, he's belave a nefesh, there's a chiyuv to make an Erev. And I said to him, this is Reb Menashe Klein speaking, I said to him, why don't we gather all the Rabbanim together and why don't we make a decision? And he says that we have to hear what the Satmar Sigurd Rav will say. I'm only a Dayan, but we must hear what the Rav will say. And he meets him again and he says, yes, I'm in favor. And I heard that the Papa Rav from Williamsburg is in favor of an Erev. And if he's an Erev, then if he's in favor, I will absolutely agree. And v'yesh lasot hakol hayotzei mipi kvod kedushato hadmar mipapav. And he agreed. And then he goes on, Reb Yecheskel Rot, when he heard that the Satmar Rav said that, he now agrees there should be an Erev. And then they spoke with other great Rabbanim, Reb Yisrael Yitzchak Pekarsky, that he was a posek in Chabad, was an Adam Gadol, a giant of Torah. I know family, and he agreed. And the Papa Varav he went to speak with, and Reb Fishel Hershkowitz he went to speak with, and one Rebbe after another. And they all agreed that one of the problems with putting up an Erev in a big city, and anyone who's involved with an Erev in Long Beach, you're in Oceanside or Long Beach? Long Beach. So you have an Erev there, you have an Erev, does it interconnect with Lido Beach? It's continuous?
Now it does.
So one of the big problems in an Erev is you can knock it down, accidents happen, cars crash, trucks crash. It can be the electric company does repair work and they accidentally knock it down. And God forbid, and what happened in Borough Park, what happened in Flatbush, from Jews cut the Erev. I mean, it's beyond comprehension just to mention these words. You want to be machmir fazich, but anyway, so, and they all agreed that here we have an Erev that is fabulous, because at least on two sides of the Erev, there is no fear whatsoever of anyone cutting the Erev. How are you going to cut down the train stations, the L, the air, what's up in the air? It's fabulous, they say. And then they go, there was the Dembaritza, the Debesina Rav, Rav Stern, with an Adam Gobel, big Talmud Chacham. He originally, the survivor, came to Washington Heights. And the Dembaritza Stibel was on Amsterdam Avenue, three blocks from Yeshiva University. So in Washington Heights, at one time, you had big Hasidic center, YU, and six blocks over, the heart of German Orthodoxy, Kehillat HaDat Yeshur and Broyers, as it's popularly called. The Debrecina died, I remember his funeral yet, big mob scene in Washington Heights. We were overwhelmed by the black, whoever saw so much black in their lives at that time. And today, YU is there, has plenty of black. But at that time in YU, I told you, the only kid who wore it sits it out. Later becomes a chazan in a conservative temple in Detroit, where he's, I think he's still there until today. I don't know if he's retired yet. He's a year older than I am. But his kids are from Baruch Hashem, although his daughter is an Orthodox rabbi, Orthodox light. She's the spiritual leader of Dakei Eliezer, or was the spiritual leader of Dakei Eliezer, near Columbia University. But his other children, I believe, are mainstream from. I taught the other children. So they went to the Dembitz's son, who is now in Borough Park. Now, what he had to say, you see, this is shocking that a Talmud Chacham will say this, and it's totally against halakha. What did he say? And I quote, I'm not making this up, that yes, you can build an Erev, but he doesn't want to build an Erev because he's chayshesh, that if you build an Erev, people will go to Walbams and shop on Shabbos. Do you know what Walbams is? To bring it up to date, if I were the Dembaritza talking today in the year 2015, I would say people would go to ShopRite. Right at the F train is a tremendous, biggest ShopRite in the world. The New York Times had an article on it. Outside of Yom Kippur, they gross over $1 million every day of the year, and the New York Times explains: Shabbos, the goyim are buying for Sunday, and Sunday the Jews are restocking after feasting on Shabbos. Yom Kippur, if you've been in New York on Yom Kippur, the Goyim observe it too. Yeah, New York basically closes down. Right now, who knows what it'll be when the Arabs take over, the Muslim population, but New York basically closes down. It's the only day of the year where they don't gross $1 million. Isn't that fascinating? So he says they'll go to Walbams. Zev, why is the Rebbe having conniptions over this? What's wrong with this thinking? Zev, I want to ask you a question. Do you live in a cold climate when you're not in Israel? Where do you live all year? No?
It's in Washington Heights.
What? Doesn't it go below zero in Washington Heights? Have you ever visited Russia? I want to ask Yomo. Did you wear gloves on Shabbos in the Ukraine? Yes or no? Did you wear gloves in New York where there's no Erev? Do you know how much ink was spilled over this question? Because Dosu Asad said, you look into the Mishnah Berurah, brings down the Machlokes. Dosu Asad said, you'll take off the gloves, you'll forget to put them back on. You'll shake hands with someone. Shem Yataltel Yavirenu Dalet Amot. Dosu Amata said, Ein Gozrin Gezeirot Bisman Chazeh. That's a basic klal in halacha. We make no gezeirot since the time of the early Rishonim. As the Rishonim say, halavai, we should be makayim, the gezeirot we have. To worry about Jews shopping in Walbams, you might as well worry that Jews are going to go to the moon on Shabbos if there's an Erev. Ma inyan shmita etzel harsinai. And he goes on and on with all the rabbis who agree there should be an Erev. All right, give me 1 second. Let me see where we stand. Noah Cohn, you are right there in back. I saw your picture on the wreaths, the grist pictures. Any resemblance between you and that picture is coincidental, not incidental. That's you or that's your brother?
They look the same.
No. Zev Kahana, good. Menachem Davidson, where's Menachem? He walked out, okay. Rafi Glickman, Rafi.
Did you get the safe
for which safe are we talking about now?
No, I didn't get.
It's like with the what I spoke about last Sunday night. No one wants to sell books anymore. They get money up front. All they're interested in is getting a sucker to pay for it. Try to get the souvenir is not available in all of Israel. I spoke like a fool last Sunday night. I was made into a fool, a jackass. Big crowd, and everyone wanted to buy the souvenir, and the OU had 5 months to get it over here. I spoke with them about this last May, okay? Dance on the wall, please. Don't upset me. Same thing with that. He got an email back that no copies available in Israel. Rafi Glickman, okay. Moshe B. Schwartz. Moshe, where are you? He was here, he walked in, I saw him.
He's here, okay.
Aharon Cherniak. Am I pronouncing it right? You go with Aharon or Aaron?
Aharon.
Aharon, let me make a note, because I go with three different first names. It depends how long people know me. Arnie, you heard last week in Monday's class. Larry revealed my real name, Arnie. Aharon, that was B'nai Akiva, and then Aaron, the rabbinate. Yomo, Yitz, Herbie, Vic, Shmuel Goldstein. Shmuel, where did I see him? There he is. You were upset that I referred to you as a Breslover? My apologies, but don't be so upset. By the way, there's a Shmuel Goldstein who got smicha from the yeshiva in the 1950s, if I saw correctly. Any relative?
I'm not sure.
Okay, Goldstein is not a... Rafi Klein. Rafi, I have to speak with you after class. Or tomorrow, whatever's easy for you, just for a minute. Moshe B. Schwartz.
Is he already said that.
I see what happened. Moshe B. Schwartz was sitting there, right? He was here and he wasn't here.
He was sitting over there.
I see, and I got confused. Okay, and Moshe Schwartz, I knew I saw you. Okay, Isaac Atia. Isaac, you're a pinup boy. I saw your picture here. That's you? Pina Shalom. With all the girls. Oh my gosh. Are you married?
I'm married.
Baruch Hashem, you better not let your wife see this. Or did you marry one of these?
I've never seen this.
After class. I thought it was you. Wow, that's something. Dov Carpey. Carp. And it's a French name?
My grandfather was a musician, so he added the E for flair.
Kala Kavod, I have a grandson who's a musician. He has a ponytail for flair. But he's a very happy kid today. You know why? He's in has the yeshiva in
Tekoa,
right? It's a branch of the Rabbi Steinfeld's empire. I think I told you. And he said to me, Saba, I no longer feel like an outcast. Where he went to high school, everything else, he's a musician, he's a storyteller, he does movies. And he says, here between 1 to 3, the place turns into an orchestra. Everyone is practicing. Alex Glassman. Okay, who am I missing? Is there anyone here whose name I didn't call? Steve Ressler. Okay, 1 second, Steve, I don't have your name. Wait, 1 second. I have to redo this whole list already. Steve Ressler, yes.
Eli Shasta.
1 second, you sat in last week in the Monday class?
I did.
Eli,
E-L-L-Y,
one L, okay. S-H-O-S-T-A-K?
E-S-T-A-C-K.
Wait.
S-H-E-S-T-A-C-K.
Shestak, it should be. And you pronounce it Shestak?
No, Shestak.
Shestak. What's the origin of the name?
So the origin of the name is it's a Litvish, Ukrainian area, and family came in the early 20th century to Philadelphia. My great-grandfather was a rav there.
Under what name?
Yehuda Shestek.
Shestek, okay. And what year snicher are you?
My second year.
And where did you grow up?
Teaneck.
Boy, Teaneck is Yerva in Israel. And your poor rabbi there, my Talmud, is under attack. Whatever he does, there are people who are out to attack him. It's unbelievable.
Which one?
Rabbi Przanski.
He's great.
The Pruz. My student.
There's another new student.
No, I need names.
Adam Friedman.
Friedman, F-R-I-E-D?
M-A-N.
Two N's. What's your smicha? Where are you from?
Toronto.
Which of his positions is being attacked?
It involves Washington. Not a position, it's what's going on over that rabbi and how we can take steps in the future. No matter, it's such a tragedy, there are no words. And what I said before in the name of Joe DiMaggio says it all. We better call him Reb Yossel DiMaggio. Skivena, he had a good mind. I don't think he graduated elementary school, but he had a shtickle, a good cup. Okay. So we only have limited time left. Let me roll. You can feel the pain. You can feel the pain. And then he says what we spoke about last year, and no one has been able to come up with the names he quoted, which I quoted to you. He said, and in Brooklyn, we have a very easy time doing an Erev because you have the subways and you have the water. And everyone has checked the water. Wherever there's water, there are fences. No one is going to allow people to fall into the ocean. Where you have beaches, let's take Manhattan Beach. So you know, before you go into Manhattan Beach, the whole area is fenced in. So if this is the case, you have natural boundaries. You don't have to do too much at all. The subways are there. The fences are there. Everything is fenced in. And at a meeting of the Rabbanim in Borough Park, we decided to go ahead and put up the Erev. Now, putting up an Erev involves the following. Number one, you have to check out wherever there's an opening. You have to come up with a solution of how to put up a petach, how to put up a tzurat ha-petach, where the opening is. These openings in Borough Park, and this is what he's saying, is omeid meruba al haparutz. There's much more enclosed than there is open. So that's the first thing you have to do. How you put up the openings, generally they work with the electric company, with the wires, with the phone company. You have to be sure it passes on top. I don't want to go into all the technical details. Sometimes they put up an additional little pole attached to the big pole so that the wire will pass over that pole. And they're solutions. They're experts. They're rabbanim who are experts on how to put up an Erev. Then you have to make an Erev Chatzerot. So you have to, on behalf of the community, if you go into the Moatza Datit in Yerushalayim and Rehov Chavatzalet, which will be the seat of the two new chief rabbis, you'll see on the wall, you can ask them to show it to you, where the Erev Chatzerot, the Matzot, are enclosed in a glass case. And every year before Pesach, they take out the old Matzot, put in the new Matzot, make an Erev again, make a bracha. And this has a lot of halakhic implications. Can anyone tell me what I'm talking about? Once they make a general aid of chatzedot for the city, you're not allowed to make your own aid of chatzedot. If you make a bracha, it's a bracha levatala. In other words, if you want to make, and this already leads us into the Frunkite element. If you want to make your own Erev because you don't hold from what Reb Menashe Klein is doing, make your own Erev. You're joining together your backyard with your neighbor's backyard. And Borough Park, if you walk through the streets, you'll see private Eruvim joining two, three houses together. But you can't make a bracha. If you make a bracha, it's a bracha lebatala, because the people who put up the Erev already made Erev Chatzerot for you. And there's a nusach with Erev Chatzerot, like Erev Tatshvilin, that with this Erev, everything is joined together, it becomes one reshut, and therefore you are allowed to carry. And this is what they did in Borough Park. Now, once there was an Erev in Borough Park, then the whole machloket begins about Flatbush. And I'll come to it in great detail, but not yet. Flatbush, very bitter, caustic in fighting. Flatbush already were modern, at that time Flatbush had big modern Orthodox synagogues. You had Rabbi Shachman's synagogue in Israel. You had Rabbi Leo Landman, it's a name that you don't recognize, he was once dean of the Bernard Rebel Graduate School, Zichron Lebracha, a very wonderful rabbi, a good scholar, an edler mensch. You had his shul, there were other shuls further over. It didn't have the Hasidic element of Borough Park. With this all, you have the Litvisha, who are all over. And the Litvisha refused to budge. Reb Moshe, the Mishkanot Yaakov, the Soloveitchik family, the Machmirim, one after another. Reb Aaron Cutler, who was a definitive voice. As I said last year, in my humble opinion, Reb Moshe was influenced to a degree by Reb Aaron. And people criticized me. Reb Moshe had a mind of his own. I realize Reb Moshe had a mind of his own. And I realize Reb Moshe would have been machmir no matter what. But he wouldn't have been as strident against those who were mekil. But it seems Reb Aaron Cutler was against the Erev. Even though, to be intellectually honest, Reb Menachem Kasha, in his Divrei Menachem, claims that he approached Reb Aaron Cutler, and Reb Aaron Cutler was working out the sugya. He said he hadn't touched it in many years, and he was working out the sugya, and Reb Aaron died before he could finish and give him a tshuva. And Rav Kasha claims that you cannot count Reb Aaron among the Eisrim. But in my humble opinion, with my hand on the pulse of the literature that I have at my disposal, my feeling is that Reb Aaron was machmir, and his opinion carried great weight. If you recall my class of last Monday on the question of shackling behemoths and how you get the animals ready for slaughter, and when the Rav says to Reb Aaron Cutler, if you don't sign on the heta, I will show the world that you are halachically incorrect. And Reb Aaron signed on. When it came to the Erev, there was no one who could say that to Reb Aaron Cutler. Because the Rav essentially held like Reb Aaron Cutler, held the Mishkanot Yaakov, held the Tetzayin Amit, held that it was Rishut HaRabim, held that you didn't need 600,000 people walking on the street in broad daylight. But here, it was not like shackling animals. Here, Reb Aaron and Reb Moshe and the Litvisha Welt had a very definitive negative opinion. And the whole concept now in America, Das Teira, Agudat Yisrael, you can't argue with Gedolei Yisrael, Da'as Torah, or whatever name you know it by, Da'at Torah, but this is America of the 1970s. And let me know off the class, because next week we're going to come into the Torah with a full description. The Torah in America actually began in the 1950s into the 60s. It began with Reb Moshe Feinstein and the famous tshuva of Reb Moshe, an artificial insemination donor, AID. And Reb Moshe took the position that Me'ika, the halakha, we can be mata AID, with all the implications. Got to remember, AID, Reb Moshe's mata, because rovakum, it doesn't create mamzeret, it doesn't create, if a brother and sister marry, if they were, a woman was impregnated by the sperms of the same man, two different women, and their children marry, if it's Gentile sperms, perhaps it doesn't create a relationship between the children, etc., etc. So Rav Moshe was Mater AID. There's a lot of literature on this. I lectured extensively maybe 20, 25 years ago, 30 years ago. A lot of literature. But the Satma went very stridently against Rav Moshe. And that's where you first hear on American soil that they are calling Reb Moshe in the middle of the night. Vic, you're a witness to this. Calling him, waking him up, desecrating his name. It was intolerable, but it began, I would say, it's the late 50s into the 60s. So there always was already a precedent for terror tactics. It followed to Israel in the early 70s when the Belzer Rebbe, the present Belzer Rebbe, led the Hasidim out of the Satmar position and into Agudat Yisrael. What went on here was indescribable. Ultimately, they had to reach a truce because Belzer, for every Satmar in Israel, there are 100 Belzer. So they beat the hell out of the Satmar. For every Belzer in America, they're 100 Satmar. They beat the hell out of the Belzer. This followed through then with Lubavitch, with Nebuch, a Lubavitcher coming to Williamsburg to teach Tanya, and he barely got out with his life. It's indescribable. I was in New York at the time. The TV news programs had a field day. Satmar beating up on Lubavitch, Lubavitch running to save its lives, and the Rebbe being desecrated at every turn because he called Entebbe a miracle and praised Tzva Haganali Yisrael. So you have precedence, lo aleinu. But by the early 1980s, it reaches an all-time high, and you'll have some of the tactics here you won't believe, but it's recorded for posterity. So first of all, I want to remind everyone we're going to daven Maariv right after class. We must have a minyan. It's a chesed with the older people here, myself included, so we don't have to run out to a shtibble looking for a minyan now. Secondly, what did we do today? We set the stage for the tears of Reb Menashe Klein for supporting an Erev in Borough Park. Once again, you see that Reb Menashe Klein is on very firm ground. You want to be machmir b'bakasha. But Me'ika Hadin, if the Chatam Sofer was in favor of a Ruvin, who are we, a Dayatom, to argue? Chumras Chumra, but we cannot argue. Yomo, this is for you. This is a Talmud I taught in Moscow. Yitzhak, I have stuff for you. 1 second. This is a Talmud I taught in Moscow, January 1981. He contacted me. He's now writing articles in Russian on Torah problems. Do you read Russian? Okay. Let me know what you think. Disregard the English. It's translated. Pass this back. Yitzchak, do you have Sridim? Memory of Rabbi Rose? Okay. And that's, he's in Los Angeles today. Do we have anyone with a Hasidic feeling? This is taking messages of the Rebbe, and it's Mo'adim l'chassidut, taking messages that deals with Yom Ben HaMetzarim, Chodesh Elul, Chagei Tishrei, turning the Rebbe's thought into beautiful halacha l'maisa, hashkafa l'maisa. What they're doing is fabulous. Anyone who teaches kids, this is very, very good. Edited by my student, Aryeh Weinberg. I studied in BMT. Okay. Anyone here who's a fan of Meir Kahana?
Yes.
And would like Moshe, but don't throw it out. You're taking it to keep, right?
Yes.
Pass this back to Herbie Maltz. Pass this down to Aaron, his picture.
Rav Nachman Kahana's son
Menachem Kahana just became a brigadier general in the Israeli Defense Forces. My dear students, anyone who misses tomorrow's shir is in bad shape, because once in your life you can learn about Rav Shmuel Belkin and his relationship with the Rav. And the only place you can learn about it, unfortunately, is in this classroom at 9:05. If davening takes a little longer tomorrow with Kriyat HaTorah and Vahu Rachum, bring breakfast to class and enjoy yourself. Give out Sidurim. We're ready to say, until we meet again in health and happiness, in regards to all those listening across the world, Das V'danya. For Hurachum, who do we have a Chiyuv here? Anyone a Chiyuv? Zev, Davin, in honor of your grandparents being here. Okay?
Listen, you know the Meiselman writes that the Rav opposed tzitzis with Chelis because he never saw it in his youth. This is what we just spoke again, the opposite. In other words, if you didn't see it in your, if there's no tradition, it's as if it didn't exist.
Correct.
Is that true?
Go off.